Welcome to part two of Mythology, Greek versus Norse. I'm here with Jed. How you doing today, Jed?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be back here. Glad you didn't get fed up with me after the last episode and switch out with someone else.
No, never, never. You are the only choice. You're the only choice. So, last episode we talked about the Greek mythology section of this episode. Now, let's talk about Norse mythology. So, kind of give us a little basic, like, I'm guessing you know the history of Norse mythology. Let's talk about that first.
Yeah, so from what I remember, our knowledge of what Norse mythology like consists of and everything that we have comes from, I think it was really like two epics or two collections of these stories, with the first one, I believe, being called the Elder Edda and the second one being called like the Poetic Edda. And this was just kind of a collection of these, Norse folk tales, mythologies, you know, the stories about the gods, the creation of the world and the heavens and the things like that, an introduction to the gods and kind of everything that kind of encompassed what the original Norse religion kind of believed in into that day. One of the best collections of it is in a book that we've mentioned in the previous episode. Edith Hamilton's mythology, she wrote mainly about Greek mythology, but she then went ahead and did kind of these, I don't know if I can necessarily say that she did translations, but, you know, rewrote these stories, and that's something that if you were to purchase that book or rent it or read through it at your library or something, I believe like the last quarter of the book or so actually consists of Norse mythology rather than Greek mythology.
Okay. So is that similar to the something called a collection of poems called the Prose Edda? Edda? Do you know anything about that?
I believe so. The Edda, so E-E-D-D-A, mm-hmm. Edda or Edda. I want to say maybe the Elder Edda is the Prose Edda. Because that would make sense being that the poetic is opposite of prose.
Okay. I guess that makes sense. So, that makes sense.
But yeah.
So this is coming from, you know, give us a little backstory, a little history on like I think a lot of people don't understand, maybe, well, not understand, but I don't think a lot of people, I mean, they know the Greek mythology was from Greece, obviously, but like, mm-hmm. I know we kind of mentioned it a little bit in the first episode, part one, but tell us a little bit kind of about the region of the world that we're in.
Yeah, so with Norse mythology, that all originates from the Scandinavian countries. And so that's five countries that make up Northern Europe, and then also one island, Iceland. So Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, and Iceland are the five Scandinavian countries. Hmm. And all the countries that happen to have the Scandinavian cross on their flags, just with different colors. But this is an area that was traditionally settled by the Norse, and is what we think of as the area where Vikings came from. If you don't think of the word Norse, Vikings is something that very clearly comes to people's heads. And so this was the gods, the religion that Vikings before Christianity came in and kind of encompassed that area. This was the religion that they believed in. These were the gods that they prayed to. And the stories that they believed as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Because I'm trying to think of like, I mean, first off, I think I should definitely do a flag episode at some point in time. Be like, be like Sheldon off the Big Bang Theory. but have fun with flags. Except I can't have that title because that's probably copywritten. So it's a very. Very rugged area.
Yeah, so it did have some agriculture to certain purposes, but this is an area that the majority of it is far, far above the equator. A large amount of the area is also above the Arctic Circle as mm-hmm. well too. Probably the majority of the population existed and lived kind of in the southern area, so the bottom of Norway, the bottom of Sweden, the bottom of Finland. Denmark is further south than all of those countries. But it's areas that, you know, it still could have decent summers, springs, and stuff like that. But it is known to have very frigid, very cold winters, and especially with Iceland, throwing it into that category as well, too. Greenland was an area, too, that was settled kind of by the Vikings as well, which is even farther north than Iceland. But yeah, very traditionally very rugged, like you said, rugged people. And I mean, again, if you think of the image of what we think of Vikings, even if some of it is more fantasy based, there absolutely is truth into kind of the images and the representations that we have of Vikings today in how they lived.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking about kind of that region, about how Iceland is green and Greenland is ice. But being further north, that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, we kind of mentioned in part one about how Greece and Rome and that area of the world was a little bit more technologically advanced and in preservation and other things, and how these poems and these stories in the Norse mythology really didn't survive time, I guess.
Yeah, not nearly as much. I mean, the Vikings certainly, the Norse people certainly had technology of their own. They had different forms of communications. You know, we think of the term of runes. Is something that does come from like the Scandinavian region, and that was a form of their writing or communication that they had at that point. But when you think of technology, when you think of civilization like the Roman and the Greek empires had, the Vikings did not have this. And this was a very tribal group, if you will, as well, too. It took a while for there really to be somebody who kind of took control. And despite having pretty good military might, they were more than willing to quarrel with each other. Maybe somewhat that you could say how some of the Greek city-states were. Because really, Rome was the one of all of these that actually built an empire that far exceeded what anyone could have ever imagined. Greece, because of their city-states, was never a place that was really going to be able to do that. And in the same way, the Vikings weren't very much that much. Now, granted, they did have, you know, a few kings or something that did rise up to become people who actually ruled over not just their tribe or their clan, but actually were able to kind of gain power from underneath, you know, or from multiple of those. And that's where, you know, Sweden became its own country, Norway became its own country, and things like that. But yeah, I mean, there are certainly still vast differences between these two, you know, between the Norse civilization and Greek and Roman civilizations.
So this was all, I mean, kind of the mythology behind it, I mean, you already kind of mentioned it as well, is very, you know, gods and very, I mean, of course, that's similar to the Greek mythology as well. But what are kind of the main differences when it comes to Norse mythology, would you say?
I would say one of the main things that stands out is overall Norse mythology has a darker like tone to it. Not to say that some stories can't come across as kind of whimsical or funny or certain things like that. They certainly had that, but you know, one of the big differences is that, you know, the Norse mythology has an end to it, a recognized end. That off the top of my head, you know, I don't know as there's ever been mentioned or written about with like Greek or Roman mythology. You know, these were, for the most part, fairly all-powerful gods. I mean, they had the Titans that certainly gobbled up a few of them or certain things like that. But, I mean, these were the cream of the crop type situation. And it's not to say these Norse gods weren't viewed as all-powerful. But there is an event, you know, it's a well-known term, whether it's because of the Marvel Cinematic Universe or just because it's become part of a lexicon. But there's an event known as Ragnarok that is the end of the world. in Norse mythology, that really this is what Norse mythology is culminating to in all these stories. And so there is kind of this darkness, in my opinion, that lingers over Norse mythology in a way that you just don't get, or that you just don't see with Greek or Roman mythology.
Hmm. Why do you think that is?
And you know, I don't know if it was just the differences in the societies and like the nature of the actual area that they lived in. Ragnarok almost comes across as this final winter, in Norse mythology. And you can almost, you know, imagine winter in Greece or in Italy versus winter in Norway or Sweden or Denmark, is they're going to be vastly different from each other. And, you know, I don't know if that would be something that's more impacted the idea of, you know, a more finite ending.
Yeah.
In Norse mythology compared to that. But you think back in olden times when they had kind of these ideas, or they tied gods to weather, when they tied gods to nature like that, that certainly could have been a part of it.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm just kind of thinking like medical advances and stuff like that even. You know, the Romans and the Greeks, they not were only advanced in technology and writing and stuff, but also probably medicine. And so... Yeah. You know, maybe their, I mean, of course, their perspective of death and darkness was probably a little different than the Scandinavians, who probably weren't as advanced in medical technologies.
Yeah. And it's interesting, though, in a way, because there are certain advancements that it's like, oh, they definitely favor, you mainly probably referring more to Roman at that point, Roman and Greek. And despite how vast the Roman Empire became, that's certainly a point to Rome's, you know, militaristic abilities, and the idea of the expansion and travel. I think the one area that Scandinavians, that the Norse could actually claim greater technology or greater ability over, is actually travel. Because Norse were well known as explorers. They were well known as raiders. You know, these were people who traveled all across, but they had the ability. You know, they created these ships that could, be able to travel down rivers, but also could be travel across the entire ocean. You know, they discovered Iceland, which was this island out in the middle of the Atlantic. They discovered Greenland. You know, they made trips to England, they made trips to France, they made trips to the Mediterranean. So, I mean, they had phenomenal ability and knowledge as seafaring folk. And then something that, you know, there's always been a huge push to acknowledge more is that Vikings discovered, Leif Erikson discovered North America far, far earlier than Christopher Columbus ever did. And yet we continually celebrate, you know, Christopher Columbus, when it's like, this is the person we should be celebrating because they made it there. And again, they made it in a boat that probably a lot of people today would look at and say, that kind of looks insignificant compared to, you know, the massive three ships that Christopher Columbus came over in. And I think that just speaks to the ability of the Vikings and the ancient Norse people.
Yeah. Yeah, they were definitely adventurers. I mean, they were out and they made beautiful, you know, ships, and that could withstand, I mean, powerful ships, not even just good, but powerful. And they were able to explore that northern hemisphere. So, I mean, and it's just a different world there. It's a different world there entirely.
Yeah. So. But no, and I mean, you can see that, like we said, the differences in their cultures, despite them also, you know, both of these societies, these cultures believing in these pantheons of gods, just the way the rest of life has been for them has really allowed these mythologies to completely adapt differently from each other in those ways.
Yeah. So let's kind of talk about the gods a little bit, because you've already mentioned a couple of them. But obviously, Greek mythology had gods. Norse mythology has gods as well. These ones might be a little more well-known because, like Jed said, the Marvel movies. But kind of dive into the gods a little bit.
Yeah, so I mean, especially with the Marvel movies, a lot of people are going to know, you know, Thor. being the god of thunder. They're going to know Odin, the Allfather, the king of the gods, and Loki. Those are really going to be the big three that everybody knows. Mm-hmm. And for good reason. And they really do correlate and match up directly as they are in the Marvel Universe. You know, Thor is the god of thunder. And while Thor, one thing I would say to speak to Thor is while he is a prominent character within Norse mythology, he is not the main character that Marvel has kind of taken him and made him.
Yeah.
Still a very significant character, still well known, and a lot of stories that come out of what we still have of Norse mythology do include Thor. And even when it comes to Ragnarok, he plays an important role in that as well too. But it's probably Odin, and even Loki, you know, almost has a bit more stories about him through Norse mythology as well too.
Well, let me ask you this. So are their personalities the same? Even?
They can be, and I mean, part of it's kind of funny because it's like, well, whose personality? Are we talking about Thor in the first movie? Or are we talking mm-hmm. about Thor in the third movie or Endgame? I mean, they certainly can be, but I think they almost come across as a bit more serious.
Yeah, well, Thor kind of has a wide range of personalities to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, but Loki definitely is. I mean, Loki is the god of mischief.
Mm-hmm.
And tricks and deceit and different things like that. So I don't know that he's as suave as Tom Hiddleston can be, but he's definitely a trickster. He's always out doing a prank. And usually it's a prank that a lot of times can lead to bodily harm. In fact, that becomes one of Loki's biggest downfalls, is one of those pranks that he did that allowed or caused the death of one of the other gods. Which was, and I can't remember exactly what Baldur even is the god of,
mm-hmm.
But he was pretty much known as the most beautiful of the gods. And he almost has a story similar to Achilles, where what happened was the queen of the gods, who I believe is Frigga, F-R-I-G-G-A, Frigga, who was Odin's wife, went all around nature and had all of nature promise to not harm Baldur. So, you know, he wasn't dipped into a river so that only but there was one object that pretty much she deemed too harmless. It wasn't even that they refused. There was one object that she deemed harmless enough that it could not possibly be used to kill her son. And Loki, being the trickster that he is, discovered, you know, what that object was, and mistletoe.
Oh gosh.
And so he fashions mistletoe into pretty much like a dart. You know, I'll describe it almost as a lawn dart.
Because,
you know, lawn darts can actually kill people. So that's probably a better description for this.
Yeah.
And then Loki, all the gods, and this is kind of the part where it's like, this kind of shows how ridiculous and almost stupid you want to say they are. For fun, the gods would take turns like throwing things at Baldur because it wouldn't hurt him. You know, one of them would lift up a boulder and chuck it at him, and it would bounce off him like nothing. And there was one other god. I don't remember their name. They were, you know, a blind god. And Loki goes up to him, and he's like, you know, they never get to participate. He's like, here, I have something that you can throw at Baldur, and I'll help guide your hand for it as well, too.
Oh,
and, you know, this blind god has no idea. He's just at the point he's like, wow, I actually get to participate.
Oh, no.
And it is that dart that is, you know, made of the one object that actually can kill Baldur, and it hits him, and boom, you know, he's dead.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that, again, kind of has that, oh, it has that lighthearted, you know, almost grim fairy tale-like-esque, you know, oh, it's kind of silly, kind of funny, and then boom, it just gets hit with that kind of darkness of, and again, even right there, a god who dies.
Mm.
We don't experience that in Greek and Roman mythology. We have the gods getting mad at each other and then taking it out on a human, taking it out on one of their children, or something like that.
Yeah.
But in this instance, that was it. And even though not all of the stories involving Loki are him being, you know, this like chaotic evil or something like that, to that level, that was what ended up being the final straw for Loki, where Odin then had Loki taken, chained him to a rock for eternity at that point, with a viper over the top of his head, with the venom from the viper just dripping onto Loki's face. And that was meant to be his eternal punishment.
That seems a little dramatic.
Well, I mean, he did kill his wife's favorite son. So
that is true. That is true. Now, was Loki kind of the backstory of Thor, or like in the Marvel universe, or is that not true at all? Is that not accurate? Like, you know, the frost giant stuff.
So I do believe that is accurate. Now I'm kind of questioning myself, and I'm probably showing that I didn't look this up beforehand. I do think he actually was.
I didn't look up anything beforehand, so.
it is something where not all of the Greek, or not all of the Norse gods are the same. In fact, they were actually two different groups that used to kind of wage war against each other. There was one group that was the, and I'll probably say this wrong, but Aesir, which is like Aesir. Mm-hmm. And that is the group that Odin, Frigga, Thor, Tyr, Balder, all of these gods are from that one. But then there was another one that I believe was called the Vayner. And that's where almost some of these, I say more naturistic, but Freya, and a few others were of these other gods. They're both kind of referred to as gods. It's not like, oh, this one in Greek, where it's, these are gods, and these are titans, and these are giants, where they have their own different titles. These ones are kind of all still referred to as gods, because giants are a different species. There are, frost giants and fire giants in this mythology. There are elves, and there are dwarves in this mythology. They were two different ones, and I do believe that is a truth that Loki actually was born a frost giant. And I know he was actually also married to a frost giant too, and that even goes to the story now with the viper dripping the venom on his head, is that his wife, whose name was Angrboda. Angrboda. And that she, like, her role in this was that she actually would catch the venom in a bowl, to kind of keep him from pain. But eventually the bowl would fill up, and she would have to then dump the bowl. And while she was dumping the bowl, then the venom would actually still land on his face. So that's the whole part of, like, that story as well, too.
Wow. That is dramatic.
Yeah. So, but there are so many, plenty of interesting characters as well too. Another one I forgot to mention so far, Heimdall, the keeper of the Bifrost, was a god. But I mean, there definitely are some similarities. You look at Zeus and you look at Odin. They're the All Fathers. They're the king of the gods. They're the most powerful, the most important. Same with Zeus, though. Zeus was a god of thunder. Thor is a god of thunder. They both kind of had a messenger god. So where Hermes was the messenger god in Greek mythology, Norse mythology had a messenger god named Hermod. Ares was the god of war in Greek mythology, and Tyr is the god of war in Norse mythology. So there you can see a lot of similarities that are kind of drawn between the two, where they have some things like that. But very much, personalities are not necessarily the same as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm just kind of thinking. I'm thinking about two things. One, it might be hard to mention, or even say, because, like you said, while in Greek mythology you have certain categories—gods, titans, demigods, whatever—but in Norse mythology it just kind of flows, and kind of the term god kind of gets thrown around a lot. But is there, like, in the Greek mythology, there's like 12 gods that you can, the primary gods. I mean, can you even do that in Norse mythology?
Like I said, so there's Odin, there's Thor, there's Loki. And Loki's even kind of a weird offshoot as well, too, because Greek mythology, while they do have Hades matches up to another god, which is going to be a name people will be familiar with, being Hela, or even just Hel. That is one where Marvel did take a creative liberty, because Hela is not a daughter of Odin, like the MCU has made it appear. Mm-hmm. Hela is actually a daughter of Loki, one of his three children.
Dang.
So,
wouldn't that have been a twist in the Marvel universe?
That would have been. But I definitely see why they did what they did. And honestly, I didn't mind it at all. You know, at that point, you knew they weren't trying to be accurate necessarily to the true Norse mythology.
Yeah.
But Loki doesn't have like a true counterpart in Greek mythology, like some of these other gods do, even though they don't necessarily have true counterparts. But I mean, so yeah, you'd probably be looking, you'd say Odin, Thor, Frigg, Frigga being the like the mother of the gods, or the matriarch type view. Frey and Freya, Tyr, Heimdall, Hermod, Baldur. Njord, I think it was like the god of the sea. But again, not that, and he's not even necessarily a well-known god. There's even only kind of like one story about him that's almost a funny one.
So it's almost like
this, but
it's almost like they found like certain stories about certain gods, and then maybe like they mentioned the god's name, and they're like, "Oh, that's interesting. What are we going to learn about them?" And then they never learn anything else.
Yeah, and it's like one, that type and of thing. I'm sure they had more, but I mean, even with Njord, was a god, and the story that I remember him from was there was this frost giant. If I'm remembering the story correctly, I think the gods killed her husband. Great start. And so she demanded that she be allowed to marry one of the gods. And immediately fell in love with Baldur, who, again, you know, all of Norse mythology has described him as like the most beautiful of the gods, and everything like that. And the gods come up with it and pretty much say, like, fine, we'll let you, but you have to decide who you want to marry by their feet.
Oh, gosh.
Which is, you know, again, it comes across as like, this just sounds so ridiculous and funny. Like, how can you take this seriously? And it gets to the point. So she's only allowed to kind of look at their feet, like the rest of them are covered. And she comes to what she finds to be the fairest feet of all and thinks, oh my goodness, these have to be Baldur's. And they're not. They actually turn out to be this god, Njord, who's like the god of the sea or something like that. Who then she looks at him and it's like, and it's not trying to dog on him or anything like that. You know, everything we can be told is he's a pretty nice guy, but, you know, probably pretty simple. it's just a story like that. It's just like, okay. Man. Well, I guess that's how I, you know, the god of the sea has pretty good looking feet, I guess.
I mean, he would have to know how to swim and everything.
It's true. Probably gets, you know, gets the calluses worn away with the sand and things like that.
Yep, gotta get those calluses worn away. Well, that is interesting. I mean, you listed them. I mean, there are a number of gods that are that can be named and that are known, but then there's also some that aren't really known at all. And I feel like you don't have that in Greek mythology. You kind of have stuff about everyone, and I mean, maybe a little less of something, but overall, it's like you're still like, dang, I know enough about them to whatever. So. But I'm also very curious, like, I mean, I guess out of all the mythologies in the world, Norse mythology is a good one to just take and run with for a Marvel superhero.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, and, you know, I think Marvel certainly took their creative liberties with it, but, you know, it almost may have been one, too, that at that point, not too many were taking with stuff. You know, DC has already used Greek mythology. Wonder Woman is tied into Greek mythology, and, like, some of her main villains are, like, Ares and things like that. And Marvel did take Greek mythology as well, too. Hercules, who's supposed to be getting introduced into the MCU here recently, you know, has long played a pretty prominent role in like the actual Marvel comics for a long time, and certain other characters as well too. But it could have been an opportunity to take this, you know, Norse god who is probably well enough known, or at least enough, but you can really kind of do it because, hey, nobody else is using them. We can kind of introduce them and we can take our creative liberties and build them. And, you know, and the dude's a god, you know, we can make him overpowered.
Yeah.
Because at that point, a lot of it is almost them combating to see who could make the most overpowered character. And half the time it's Marvel having to say, well, who can we have even stand up against Superman? Because DC's greatest superhero, is this, you know, unbelievably overpowered alien. And then Superman's right there. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah, you know, I think they took that and, you know, kind of went there, you know, to run with it and be able to have that. And in a way, the legacy of Norse mythology has been better because of it. A, because they've just been able to take that and, you know, add to it, even though it's not true mythology, but it's allowed people to actually have an interest in that mythology and, you know, probably gave it far more people wanting to learn about Norse mythology than maybe they did even 100 years ago.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was about to say. What I was thinking was, you know, they really did open the eyes, open the books, open the floodgates, whatever, to Thor and the Norse mythology. And just like you said, get people to, you know, learn more about it than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and I didn't even think, like, I honestly didn't even think that Heimdall was actually, like, in Norse mythology. Like, I thought maybe he was just, like, a Marvel character or anything. So I was surprised to see his name when I was looking up the Norse gods. I was like, oh, even he's one of them. So,
yeah. Yeah, and it is. I mean, but he's one that it's like, is he as prominent of a character in Norse mythology as he is in the MCU, in the Marvel universe? Probably not, because his role, as far as we've all been told, is he's the bridge keeper.
Yeah.
He's not the god of, you know, the seas. He's not the god of the underworld or anything. Like, he's the god of the Bifrost, of this bridge that connects worlds together.
Yeah. I mean, even Thor's friends, you know, I think they're friends in the Marvel universe, but like Sif and all them, I can't remember the names of the other people.
Like the Warrior Three, Volstagg, and yeah, I can't remember all
Thor,
their names.
Thor is your,
like,
favorite.
Three, I think, was the term.
Yeah, yeah, but even they are Norse gods or heroes or whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they are, and I mean, I think Lady Sif is, you know, Marvel, you know, made Jane Foster his love interest, and in real Norse mythology, it is Sif who is his love interest, and I believe there's a story about her, where like somebody is able to attack her and pretty much cuts off all her hair. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if it was like she had blonde hair and now because of that she has black hair, or if it was like vice versa. But there was a Norse mythology, or a tale in Norse mythology all about Sif as well too.
Interesting. Any other gods you want to mention before we move on to something else?
not off the top of my head that I can come to.
So that might come up when we start talking about other stuff. You might be like, oh, there's this one.
Yeah. I'm like, I know there's a couple other things I'd probably talk about, but you might be leading into those. So I'll let you take over again.
So what about creatures? Obviously, you know, when we talk about Greek mythology, we talk about the creatures and everything that was a part of that. And I mean, there's some similarities in creatures, but there's also very big differences. Do you know? I mean, you already named several creatures: elves, dwarves, very Lord of the Ring-esque.
Yeah, I think so. You know, very Lord of the Ring-esque, and that's actually, you know, J.R.R. Tolkien was a scholar of like ancient language and civilizations, and I think Norse was one that he really did focus on, to the point where I think he even studied the language enough where he could do translations of these stories as well too. So you do have some of those characters like the giants, the frost giants, fire giants, like the elves, and dark elves and dwarves, who all, you know, encompass different aspects and things like that. But even if you talk about some of like the named creatures as well, too, one of my favorite ones is, so the whole world or the whole universe is based around this giant tree called Yggdrasil. And this is what connects all the worlds. It connects the world of the gods. It connects Midgard, which is the equivalent of Earth at mm-hmm. this point. It connects Jotunheim, where the giants live, and Niflheim, and all these other places as well, too, that where the elves live, the dwarves live, and is the Norse equivalent of the underworld. excuse me. And all these places. And so there are three massive creatures, though, that live on this tree. There's this giant bird, whose name I forget, who lives at the top. There is a dragon who is at the bottom, who sits there and gnaws on the roots, and its name is Nidhogger. and then the last one, which is the funniest one of all, though, is there is a giant squirrel who lives in this tree, a giant mm-hmm. squirrel named Ratatosker, who all he does is he runs back and forth, up and down the tree, up and down the tree, up and down the tree, and is pretty much sitting there just trying to rile up the bird at the top of the tree and the dragon at the bottom of the tree make them, like, mad at each other. So, like, again, it's just one of those things that's like, where
did they come up with this?
Was there a comedian who was just like, oh, I'm going to add this to the story because it's going to be so stupid?
Well, that's what was kind of funny about it is I was looking up creatures and everything like that. And all of a sudden, I was like, what is this Ratatuskar creature? I bet it's probably really scary. It has a really scary name. And then I was like, a squirrel? What? A squirrel? I didn't get that. So that was a very surprise to me that it was a squirrel. I had no idea that was an actual thing.
But two of probably the most important creatures that more people maybe are more likely to know about go back to where I said how Loki had three children, one of which being Hela, who is the equivalent of being like the goddess of the underworld. But these other two are two massive creatures. The first one is called Jormungandr, or the easier name for it is the World Serpent or the Midgard Serpent. And it is, you know, this giant snake, this giant serpent that encompasses the entire world, living in the seas. And it's known to the point that it grew so large that it was literally swallowing its own tail.
Mm-hmm. I read about that one.
Yep. And then the second one of these is the Fenrir Wolf.
Yes.
Which, again, for anybody who watched, you know, the Thor Ragnarok movie, that mm-hmm. was a big aspect of that one as well, too. And, you know, this was a wolf that continued to grow larger and more aggressive to the point where the Norse gods were trying to find a way to contain it and to chain it. And they continued to build bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger chains to try to hold this creature down. And it kept breaking them. And so mm-hmm. they finally, through like a magical means, I don't remember if it was the dwarves or the elves, had them create this. And it ended up just being a rope. Like, it wasn't even a chain at that point to go ahead and to bind Fenrir. And the only way that Fenrir would agree to even do it, because they tried to present this as a challenge, like, oh, surely you can break this. And, you know, the wolf was dumb enough to let him end up doing it, but smart enough to be like, yeah, this probably has to be a trick. And so he pretty much said, the only way I'll let you even try to put this on me is if one of you will hold your hand in my mouth as I do so.
Oh, and so
the only one who was brave enough was Tyr, the god of war. And so he stuck his hand in the wolf's mouth. And when the wolf could not break this rope, you know, it lashed out in rage and bit off his entire hand. So, but these two creatures are well known for being, what leads to kind of Ragnarok is that Fenrir is able to break free and Jormungandr as well, too. And that even goes to, you know, and that's where I mentioned, like, Thor plays a point, you know, in that final end, is that Jormungandr and Thor actually both end up killing each other. Thor strikes it down with his hammer, but Jormungandr is able to poison Thor with his venom, so they both end up dying. But Fenrir ends up as the ultimate end, because I believe that Fenrir swallows the sun. And at that point just leads kind of to the death of this entire universe.
Like the literal sun?
Like the literal sun, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Not like sun as in like a young child or whatever or stuff.
The not sun. As in young child or not as in Jesus.
Well, wow, that's it. I had both of those creatures on my list, or all those creatures on my list. But yeah, that's interesting that they have not only, you know, I mean, I guess you'd have that in Greek mythology. You have giants and cyclopses and stuff like that. I guess those are kind of the same thing. They're not just a creature. They bring more to the story than just, you know, being a, you know, monster or whatever.
Yeah, but... And I mean, a couple others. So this one, I don't know, is ever mentioned in mythology, but it was one I mentioned in last week's episode, being that the Kraken is actually a creature from Norse civilization, not from like Greek civilization or anything like that. But that's another like one-off that people get kind of confused, and mostly because of like the movie like Clash of the Titans or something. They think that's where it originally comes from, or Pirates of the Caribbean as well.
Yeah.
Another fun creature to talk about is actually Loki's secret fourth child. He's not really secret, but
jeez, Loki.
Everyone thinks of the other three. But what makes this funny, though, is the other three, Loki is the father of them. This fourth one, Loki is actually the mother of it.
What?
Yeah.
How does that work?
And this was, again, another one of those like ridiculous stories that it's like, this doesn't make sense. And also, who in the world would come up with this? But I think it was like this dwarf or something who had, you know, was working on building, I think he was building a wall around Asgard for them. And, you know, the gods were very much trying to be tricksters or things like that. They wanted to essentially get stuff done for them without having to make payment. And so they'd almost offer things up as challenges. To get what they wanted, but hopefully to also like come out on top, where it's like, haha, we don't have to pay you, or we don't have to give you what we agreed upon. And it ended up being so like this builder who was working on whatever it was that they needed or challenged them to had this incredible horse that could just pull anything. And it got to the point that they realized, like, this horse is the problem. Like, this, if this guy doesn't have this horse, he can't do what he, like, if he has the horse, he's going to win the bet. If he doesn't have the horse, he's going to lose the bet. And so, because it was one of those situations that I think Loki was ultimately the one who kind of got him into that situation, it was kind of put on him to be like, either you fix this now, or you're going to pay for it. And similar to the, you know, the Marvel movies and things like that, Loki is a shapeshifter in this universe, and he shapeshifts into a beautiful female horse.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, again, you know, bats its pretty eyes at this builder's horse, and it goes off. And they don't see Loki for a while, pretty much. And then suddenly it comes back, and now there is this incredible eight-legged horse who becomes Odin's, like, pride steed named Sleipnir. And it's actually one that the gods figure out. Loki, as that female horse, got pregnant and gave birth to Sleipnir.
Wow.
Yep.
That's intense.
Yep.
Wow. What do you know? What do you know? Loki. He is the god of mischief for sure.
Yep, and I think the stories definitely, you know, mentioned them making fun of him and being pretty embarrassed over all of that. But yeah, in a way, it was also a way for him to find favor with Odin again. That, like, hey, I screwed up, I fixed it, and not only that, here is this
eight-legged horse.
Yeah, eight-legged horse that is now yours.
Oh my gosh, that is funny. That's a funny story. And you're right. I mean, like, how did people come up with this? Like, it's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. Any other creatures that you had in mind to talk about?
So the only other one I kind of have in mind, and this one at least is almost different enough because it doesn't really involve the gods at all, is Grendel and the story of Beowulf.
Beowulf. You mean like the narrative Beowulf? Is that the same thing?
Yep.
Interesting.
And so I know that one comes from more Norse and Scandinavian history, and is essentially that Beowulf is the one who goes and is able to slay this creature called Grendel, that is pretty much doesn't line up with a description of like anything normal. It's clearly not human, so you can only describe it as like a monster. And then, you know, Grendel's mother comes for Beowulf and he has to come to an agreement with her. And I think he actually has to end up like giving her another son to replace his. So it'd be another story I have to read again. But that's another one that's at least kind of interesting because that one really doesn't include the gods at all in that storytelling. Rather, that's one that's like, hey, you know, it still has this creature that, you know, probably is not real, but who knows? But yeah, this one is actually solely based on a Norse hero rather than, you know, a Norse god like Thor coming in or Tyr coming in or Loki coming in to be the ones who lead the story.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, well, we talked a lot about the similarities and differences along the way, but are there any other kind of noticeable differences or similarities that we haven't quite talked about yet between the two, kind of wrapping up with this topic of conversation?
I don't know that this necessarily has anything to do with the mythologies themselves, but it is... Maybe you can say it's ironic, or maybe because they were both in Europe, it's like, well, that just makes sense. But it is interesting how the areas where both of these mythologies sprouted from, so, you know, Greece, Italy, and Scandinavia, that these mythologies all ended up being replaced by, you know, Christianity as the dominant religion.
Yeah.
And I mean, Christianity was the dominant religion of all of Europe, so that's maybe, well, it's like, yeah, that's not that crazy of an idea to be like, yeah, what are you thinking? You think it was going to be Hinduism took over? You know, something like that. And it's like, so, you know, it's probably not really that big of like an eye-opening deal, but to me it is kind of interesting how, which you could probably truly say, the death of these mythologies as actual religions and transformations into what we know them as today, just mythologies and folk tales and stories like this, was because of Christianity coming in as a religion instead.
That is interesting. That is interesting. Because, I mean, these people truly believe that these stories, these, you know, mythologies that they heard so much about and that they kept preserved was their history. So that is interesting that it just kind of died out once Christianity came place, and that's saying a lot for sure. But yeah, well, I mean, that's all I got for Norse mythology, and I mean, you know, there are a lot of similarities. I mean, we kind of talked about that, about the gods and, you know, who they were and what they were. I mean, but also the differences were primarily the gods. You know, gods in Norse mythology could die. Gods in Greek mythology could not. And just like you said, overall, the overarching story, that one of the biggest differences is in Norse mythology, there is an end, end all be all, while Greek mythology, there's not.
Yeah. So, but I mean, both of them, again, at that point are super enjoyable. And it is something that for people, if you like a good story, these really do come across more as like folk stories. Majority of them are incredibly short, easy reads. So something like Edith Hamilton's Mythology can give you a good overview of all. If you like them written more with the modern vernacular, or different things like that. I'm blanking on his name. Neil Gaiman actually went ahead and rewrote all of like the Norse mythology stories, and the book is simply just called Norse Mythology. But didn't modernize them like they're all taking place in the U.S. or anything like that. but just made them so they're just easier for a 21st century English speaker to read and understand.
Yeah.
Wrote them in a way where it's not oversimplified though. So, I mean, that's a great resource if you have any interest in that as well too. But they're just fun. They're good stories. They're interesting. And it's a worldview. It's a window to look back and see what a previous culture believed in. To me, that really does make it really interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I'm fascinated in mythologies. Greek, Roman, Norse, all them. But yeah, I mean, if you as a listener are interested in, learning more about it, we just touched the tip of the iceberg in this hour, 2-hour-ish, longish episode, 2-part series. So, definitely look into it more. I mean, we've seen Greek mythology and a lot of pop culture references and stuff like that. While Norse mythology, we have seen it in pop culture references as well, but it's really kind of a gray-ish area as well. So, any last thoughts from you, Jed?
No, I think that's about it, and it's just kind of going continuing off what you said there. There really is just so much more to it. Pop culture hits on it and keeps it alive, but there's so much more in-depth stories that you've probably never heard that really are interesting on both sides of it. So they're both really worth looking into and interesting. And it's something that I'm glad that we have kind of put a focus on that, as much as kids hate, their assignments in schools like that, I'm glad that it's stuff that still lives on today in our educational systems. Whether that's reading like the Iliad and the Odyssey or reading through, just certain mythological stories. It's a way to keep kind of that culture alive.
Yeah. Keep the stories alive at least. Yeah. Well, you have probably heard a lot of these stories or even a lot of the names of the gods, people, creatures that we talked about. They are great stories, as we both agree that they have been told for thousands, hundreds and thousands of years. People have been telling those stories in different ways, even recently. I enjoy them for sure. But thanks for being on the show, Jed. Really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk to me for so long.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to be here.
Yes, and thank you for listening, you listeners out there. In all seriousness, thank you so much for listening and supporting this podcast. I hope you are all still enjoying it as much as I am. And the next time you'll hear from me, it'll be season 4, maybe. So thanks for listening. Stay safe out there. And remember, you don't care.